Welcome. You know what podcast you clicked on. This podcast goes deep, goes wide. Oh my gosh. It gets crazy. Before I talk about the guest, I want to tell you about my Coty, my friend Alfred, and his nectar of the gods, if you will. I have a bunch of it. If you're watching the YouTube, you can see it on the show as well. But on the podcast, you can also see more of what I'm talking about. Just go to Drink My Coty. That's C-O-T-E-A, right? Drink My Coty. It's a mushroom probiotic tea. The pH of the water, I always say, is what I like the best. It's like 2.6 or something. They do this UV super crazy futuristic zap clean your water thing. And it's good for you in all kinds of ways, right? All natural stuff in it as well. So you're not talking about a synthetic drink. Try My Coty. I don't sponsor anything that I don't drink. I drink one every day, if not two. I generally mix it with my green shake in the morning so I can get a little chillax in the morning. I know people don't say that anymore, but it seemed to fit. But anyway, that's My Coty. Lastly, go to adamlowry.com. Scroll all the way to the bottom and tell me what you think. See, it's mental training, right? It's a new paradigm shift in training. Now, what I do with mental training is I specialize in the mental health of athletes. I'm an ex-athlete myself. I even have founded a new diagnosis, I believe, called athlete's depression in the mental health world that has a very different etiology to many misdiagnoses, including bipolar, ADHD, etc. But there are many influencers, if you will, to the life of an athlete from childhood on up that make, well, the world a little different, appear different, and we process those things different. So if you're a professional athlete, or let's just call it a high-performance athlete, we all know that people are beginning to add mental coaches in their corner and mental trainers in their life. So now, listen, I'm not Mr. Miyagi. I'm not going to sit there and teach you how to focus in the ring or do these things better, if you will, right? That's not my lane. What I do is I focus on keeping your life balanced outside of the ring, outside of the gym, right? Your relationships, your social life, your kids, your parenting, etc. All the other influencers that affect how you perform in the sport that you're in. So I call what we're looking for, what we make happen, is called pure focus potential. Let's imagine you're in the ring, it's jiu-jitsu time or MMA time, and you're not so sure about your relationships. Some of the other thoughts begin to automatically come into your head, you see? See, for me, it's not about teaching you Zen state of blocking this stuff out, okay, or hypnosis or anything. This isn't what it's about, right? This is mental training. It's about using real tools. But if the life is balanced on the outside, then those thoughts, they're not getting them out. It's about a happy fighter is a good fighter, right? A focused athlete is a super athlete. And that's what I help do. So whether it's one-on-one mental training that you just need for 30 minutes or 60 minutes, try it out. I do that over the phone, virtually, or in the gym at Fusion XL in Ocoee, Florida. You can find where that address is. And if not just 30 or 60-minute mental training like that, I do mental coaching in your camp, meaning if you have a fight scheduled, a tournament, a tryout, or something like that that you're getting ready for, well, then I can be in your corner, if you will. And that's mental coaching. And the third option is setting up a mental recovery session. Now, the mental recovery and mental training sessions I do on the phone, they're 30 minutes or 60 minutes. Now, mental recovery, just 60. Mental recovery is different. It's not addiction. What we're talking about in mental recovery is coming back from an injury or a loss, maybe even athlete's depression, or if necessary, trying to cultivate a new life beyond the sport, beyond competition. So that's kind of what recovery is really encompassing. That's what I focus on. So I specialize in the mental health of athletes. We do mental training, not therapy. This is different. Athletes understand it's a different world. I'm an ex-athlete. I understand it. That's why many times an athlete, you can feel like your problems, people just don't understand. I'm arguing that they don't. But adamlowry.com, scroll to the bottom. You'll see what I'm talking about. Perhaps you have tried every diet under the sun except the sun. Perhaps you can't lose weight. Perhaps you've tried everything there is, done everything they've told you to do, diet, exercise, get moving, watch what you eat, and still nothing. This happens. Before you dive into this podcast, I want to tell you to open your mind. Be ready to question everything that you've been taught about what is, but also be prepared to think practically. To think, okay, that's how that works, sure. Yes, that's how that works. Begin to think that way. It's almost scientific. And what Dr. Jack Cruz is saying isn't that outlandish. If you pay close attention to some of the basics, which is where I'm at now. So as you're walking through this podcast with me, we are opening the door, basically 101, if you will. And at jackcruz.com, that's K-R-U-S-E.com, you can follow the blog. But I'd probably listen to this before you go to the blog, because he talked a little bit about that. But as a neurosurgeon, yes, a brain surgeon, he would tell you that he learned more after, when he began to question more things, question what he wasn't taught, and look into things. And then he started connecting a lot of pieces together in a lot of fields, from epigenetics and thermogenics, etc. And found and has proven and seen some amazing things. You know, remember that all great things in science have come because the great work that other men and women have built on top of one another. You know, my book, Transrational Structure Behavior Theory, is essentially what my book, The Cognitive Rampage, is about. But, you know, my theoretical approach that I came up with, TSBT, is built on the minds of many, many before me in various fields, cognitive, behavioral, structural, etc. And what Dr. Jack Cruz has done is that, built on the minds of Einstein and more, and taken the work from many fields and put them together, biohacked them on himself, then eventually some patients, etc., even his own sons. So, you know, if we think about pushing medicine or life optimization forward, then this is the podcast that I think embodies what that means to do, to question the norms, to question different pathways, and maybe not expect the system that's in place now to be capable of fixing itself. And that includes us as a system. You know, what do we know, what we've been taught, and what we've been told? And are we able to question those things and able to maybe find new avenues or new ways, new information? And that's what this is about. A lot of big words are going to get thrown around. Don't be turned off, right? Just stay focused on it, right? And take it slow. You can back the podcast up, listen to it again. And Dr. Cruz leaves a lot of avenues to find further competence and research behind this. So at least if you're listening, that's the right path. Then if you find yourself responding very concrete and making statements, then perhaps that's a good place to start, as I say in my book, to start questioning. So if you say something that you believe to be as concrete fact, then maybe turn that to a question and dive into that as deep as maybe Dr. Cruz has dived into these topics, these areas. I mean, we're talking quantum biology, quantum mechanics, or he's talking, right? I'm more listening. So we're walking into this together, you and I. Now, many of you listening are probably further advanced in this. Myself, Wim Hof even kind of has a correlation here as well, with the thermogenics and the cold showers, ice baths, etc. Now, I'm telling you, open your mind, you know, and share this competence as well. There's things that I'm telling you, you listen to me on the podcast when some things click in me, and I kind of just go, oh, you know, by the end, I had connected so many new brain synapses and learning that I couldn't even talk anymore at the end, where I was just kind of like, okay, been fun on the podcast, bye. You know, so, you know, take it slow. I hope you enjoy. It was an honor and a pleasure to speak to Dr. Jack Cruz. Welcome to the Cognitive Rampage podcast. It's your host, Adam Lowry, as always. I realized Dr. Cruz and I started chatting a little bit before I even went live. So we were talking a little bit. I froze and had to come back live. But Dr. Cruz, Dr. Jack Cruz, as I mentioned, is on the show. He is a neuroscientist, I could give you a very long hype intro, but a man that has conquered his own personal demons, if you will, lost a bunch of weight, investigated some things, questioned a lot of research and science that was out there. And what I am here to do is to discover what that was like, the story of, and get an education and get competence like we do on the Cognitive Rampage. So I'll try to keep the rambling short in the beginning. So Dr. Jack Cruz, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
I think we started to walk down into the world of strong opinions as we were talking before we came in, and I was mentioning some people in the Tribe of Change that had mentioned to have you on, and you know, some people really supportive, you know, and what you do and what your research is. And if you could kind of, you know, maybe in a short way, educate everybody listening, kind of you know, what you do.
Yeah, well, about probably 10 to 12 years ago, I was what I would consider a conventional neurosurgeon, meaning that pretty much everything I was taught in medical school and residency, I believed without much question. And through the process of probably medical training and residency and coming out from residency, I slowly started to put on a significant amount of weight. And, you know, prior to that, before I was even a doctor, I was actually a pretty good athlete. I was an All-American football player and baseball player. And I couldn't figure out how to do that. So I went to one of my best primary care doctors and said, look, I need to do something about this. And they gave me the conventional wisdom advice, basically exercise more, eat less, and you'll do fine. And with that advice, I gained 30 more pounds. So that's fundamentally when I started to realize, look, there's this really smart guy out there, Einstein, who said, if you keep doing the same shit over and over again and expect a different result, it's insanity. And I started to look actually pretty critically at my own patients in the clinic. And I started to notice there was a tie between me and them with my issue and their issue. So I happened to be invited to a spine meeting in around 2005 in Birmingham, Alabama. I had designed some minimally invasive spine instruments, and I was going there to talk to about 50 doctors, you know, and their families, you know, one of these fancy schmancy doctor deals. And when I was there, I was due to stand up. As soon as I stood up, I felt a horrible pain in my right knee, and I didn't know what was wrong with me. And I actually had helped getting to the podium, gave the talk, could barely get back to the room, and felt so bad that I actually got in my car and drove back to Nashville. And the most embarrassing part of the story, I don't think I've ever told anybody this, was I was in a sports car, convertible. I had to call one of my buddies at a Starbucks between Birmingham and Nashville to come help me get out of the car so I could take a piss. And my knee at this time was like the size of a bowling ball. So at the meeting before I left, one of the orthopedic surgeon's wives, who used to work for a biotechnology company in California, told me, she goes, look, I think I know what's wrong with you. I'm going to send you a couple of papers and a book, and I want you to kind of read them in this order. And she goes, I think you'll be able to figure this out. Well, cutting through all the long part of the story, she worked for a company named Amgen. And Amgen at the time had just suspended their leptin trials. And I didn't find any of this out until much later. But I read the papers in the order she told me, and then I read the book. And when I was reading the book, I had this like come to Jesus moment where I was like, is what's in this book actually possible? Is that what she's trying to tell me? Turns out that's not what she was trying to tell me. She was trying to tell me something different. But that's not how I took it.
What was it? What was it?
Well, the name of the book was The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari by Robin Sharma. And it's a pretty old book. You guys can probably pull it from an old bookstore for probably less than a penny. But the story in the book was of a really rich Jewish lawyer who was a complete asshole, basically having a heart attack in the middle of the courtroom. And with that, he decided to change his life. He quit. He went to the Himalayan mountains. And when he came back 3 years later, he was tan, 100 pounds less, and he wasn't an asshole anymore. And that's the gist of the story if you don't want to buy the book. And his name is Julian Battle. So when I got through the whole book and I started looking at the papers, I saw some pretty amazing ties. So while this was all going on, I took a trip with my family to Europe. And one of the things on my bucket list at that time, around 05, 06, was going to see Michelangelo's David. And when I was standing there, everything kind of connected. All the things in the book, the things in the paper, I started to realize, okay, this is it. And the key for me was light. It was actually about circadian biology. And I realized that food wasn't really the most important thing. And I started to jot a lot of these ideas down. Turns out right after I saw this statue and did all these things with my family, we were flying back on Delta, a 14-hour flight home. So literally I wrote all these ideas down on the napkins that Delta had because they had no paper. And those napkins eventually became the quilt document that's actually on my website if you go read it. And the organization of the quilt document really is based around where I did my residency and where my wife's from. It's based around New Orleans, and it's called 30 Different Levees. And for any of you know, or if you're a Led Zeppelin fan, you'll know that a levee protects an area of land. So these levees are really important. And this was a time when Katrina had just, you know, happened in New Orleans. So I decided to use the 30 main levees of how to protect a cell. And I just posted my ideas out there. And there was this really unusual guy that was on a website at the time. It was a food guru website that I haven't been to in a long time. But he was a real nice guy, an old guy. And I decided to share with him the document. And he looked at it and he goes, dude, this is like way, way different than anything I've ever seen. He goes, I don't know if people are going to get it. He goes, but I think you should post it. And at the same time, with me back in Nashville, I came up with the first two prescriptions from all these ideas. The first one was called the leptin prescription. The other one was called the cold thermogenesis protocol. And I used both of those on me, realizing, remember, at the time, I was still conventional wisdom, that I didn't think this was going to work. So,
and I want to be clear for people listening, too. I mean, you're a neurosurgeon, a literal brain surgeon.
I'm a brain surgeon. That's what I do.
Well, that's awesome. My daughter told me last night that's exactly what she wants to do when she grows up.
You need to talk her out of it.
Okay. I can use you to do that then. My bank account would thank you. So, I mean, the struggles even are real. You know, Dr. Mort Ortman came on to a stress guy, and he talked about his trials through becoming a doctor, et cetera, and his stress and anxiety levels and what you deal with. He talked about the hectic schedule, et cetera, and all of this. So even knowing with
that wasn't the problem, though.
No.
And see, that's what most people blame it on. They blame it on the stress. But what we don't realize, the number one stressor in all of our lives is light stress. See, we are creatures of light, and circadian biology is controlled by light. And the real problem with my job that got me sick was being up at night, destroying my melatonin with the use of blue light through my phone, the hospital, the computers.
Lack of vitamin D, right?
Excuse me?
Vitamin D plays into all that role too, right? I mean,
well, vitamin D plays in that role because you can't make it when you're inside. You know, especially working during the day. But the real big issue was the blue light, how it affected the growth and metabolism pathways through the eye. That's actually where the idea originally came from. So like I said, I made these two prescriptions up, never believing either one of them myself, because, you know, as a scientist, I'm a skeptic. So I did them on myself. And in 3 months, I lost 77 pounds. And in 11 months, I lost 131 pounds. And I distinctly remember back then, my wife watching me in the shower doing the things I was doing, and she's like, this is like incredible. You know, I was losing weight at an astounding rate. And to freak you out even further, I was eating more than I did when I was fat. I was just eating different things and doing it at different times of the day and not doing any snacking at all. And when it worked, a lot of my colleagues in the hospital were kind of shocked because, you know, all of them came up to me and said, dude, did you have surgery or something to lose the weight this fast? And I had a couple of really good friends, one specifically a gastroenterologist, and I told him kind of the story I'm telling you right now. And he says, look, I'm going to start sending you some patients who aren't neurosurgical in basis. And he goes, I want to see what you can do with them. And I remember the first one he sent to me was somebody that had eosinophilic esophagitis. This was a disease I didn't even hear of, okay, at that time. And within 6 weeks, the patient went back and she was better, you know, to him. And Don stopped me in the surgeon's lounge. He goes, look, he goes, I'm going to keep sending you different things. If these people keep getting better, you're going to, you need to put this information on the internet. And that's when I ran into Dexter at this other food website. And Dexter, he didn't think people would get it, but he said, I think you need to put this out there. He goes, cause this is totally different than what anybody's talking about. And then people on the internet, when I started to put my information out there, they started to apply it and they started to get better. So, you know, ultimately when I think back, you know, cause this is a long time ago now, what a doctor fundamentally is, doctors are teachers, and we've gotten away from that in medicine. And when you realize as a surgeon that you don't have to put your hands on to really help them, that you can actually help them by sharing ideas, it became a very powerful thing to me. And the thing that was really ironic is my son at the time was in high school. He was in a private high school in Tennessee, and he came home after I had lost my 77 pounds in May, you know, he's out for the summer and he looks at me, he goes, Dad, what the hell did you do? And we were at Disney World at the time. And my other nephew who was there, who was struggling in his life, he was 21 years old, flunked out of college, you know, just a bad scene. And so I started telling him and Kyle the story about what I did. And my son said to me very classically, he said, Dad, give me a rundown of what I need to do because I want to try this. And at the time, my son was 15. He was 257 pounds. And the reason I know that is because I made him go to Winn-Dixie in Orlando and get on a meat scale to see how heavy he was. And Kyle did the same thing. He was 267, and he's much shorter than my son. And they sat there while everybody else went to the amusement park and listened to what I told them. And they both said, okay, we're going to do it. So shorten the story further. Connor went back to school in, I think, 6.5 weeks. He was 57 pounds down. And Kyle, in 1 year, lost 100 pounds. And he actually wound up signing up to become a Navy SEAL. He's actually still in the military. I mean, this is a decade ago. Wow. So,
changes.
And, you know, Kyle was 21 and Connor was 15. My son now, you know, is 25 years old and he's an engineer. And the reason he's an engineer, you'll appreciate this, he wanted to be a neurosurgeon. And I told him absolutely no freaking way. I said, but the one thing that you can help people the most is to begin to learn what your dad has found about the physics of organisms so that you can begin to build things that actually can help us. See, because one of the cool things that we're doing right now is that we're able to talk over the internet using this Google Hangouts. But see, when I look at you, I feel bad for you. With all that stuff that you have around you right now, that stuff's killing you and you don't know it. And that's part of the reason why people don't understand that the things that we call progressive in nature today, and specifically technology, they don't realize that it opens the door to bad things inside cells because it affects the way energy flows in cells. And that's fundamentally really what I teach people. I teach people the nitty-gritty details of actually how it happens. And it's easier for me today than it was 10 years ago because now there's been books printed that have taken Jack Cruz's beliefs because, you know, 10 years ago, your podcast listeners probably would have thought I was batshit crazy like some of the people in the ancestral health community and the Food Guru Network because a lot of things that I found and I believe, they don't believe. They can't fathom that it's true. And the thing is, now these books have been published and all the things that I made predictions on have now been starting to come through. In fact, one of the predictions I made to my members 4.5 years ago, I did a webinar about topologic insulators. You know that the Nobel Prize this year was given for topologic insulators. And the really cool part, this in the Nobel Prize for Medicine was given for epigenetics. Well, guess what controls epigenetics? Light and topologic insulators. And this tells you what the fundamental problem with science is today. Here we have physics given it for TIs and medicine given it for epigenetics, and neither know that they're connected. And that's the problem. And I always tell people, I'm not a discoverer of anything. I'm an innovator, because I take things that we know and connect them together so that you begin to understand they make sense. And when you alter your environment, I can teach you how to improve energy flow within your cells. And when you do that, magically, things that have been, I guess, tripping you up start to get better, and you start to go, this is kind of interesting. And that's fundamentally really what I do.
I assume this goes back to the quilt, the expansion there, the root or the.
Well, if you read the quilt now, based on what I just told you, you'll get the basic ideas from a 30,000 foot perspective. And the quilt is ordered from 1 to 30, 1 being the most important and 30 being the least important. But I wrote even in the quilt document that based on how science evolved, because remember, I wrote that document about 12 years ago, based on how science evolves, I can move quilts up and down. Now, to be very honest with you, I have not touched the quilt device, I should say document, on my website, because I have been in the rapid expansion of really laying out the case. And right now, a lot of the skeptics and my critics from 5 and 6 years ago on the internet have had to eat a lot of crow the last 2 or 3 years, because many of the predictions that I've made have actually come to fruition.
What were some of the predictions? And
the number one prediction is that I told people that we would find out that circadian biology is absolutely the key driver to all health and wellness. It's not food. Where food gurus talk about carbohydrates, proteins, and lipids, me and my members, we talk about protons, electrons, and photons. And the reason for that is very simple. You open up any biochemistry book, one of the things that you'll find, anyone that's ever printed, that the input to mitochondria is called electron chain transport. Note, it's not called carbohydrate transport. It's not called protein transport. It's not called lipid transport. The bottom line is the input is electrons. And most food gurus don't know shit about electrons. And the science that controls electrons and light is quantum physics. And I always tell people that critics of the things that I've done, they're critical because they have an understanding that is so far below where I'm at. So it makes me sound like I'm crazy. And that's how it was in the beginning. That's why that guy Dexter said to me, he goes, "Doc, I don't know if people are going to get this." Now we fast forward 10 years. A guy like you who doesn't know anything about my work, I would tell you I could give you 4 or 5 books, and within 5 or 6 months, you'd be able to cut through a whole bunch of stuff and go, "Holy shit, this is amazing." You know, because you won't believe what's been published, but you never hear from either researchers, food gurus, from the NIH, from PubMed, or from your doctor. And the reason why, it generally takes about 25 years to go from a research paradigm to clinical medicine. Well, here's the thing. If you have type 2 diabetes and they're getting ready to cut your leg off, you don't have 25 years. Okay? If you're 360 pounds like I was, you ain't got 25 years. So that was part of the reason why my medical colleagues said to me, "Look, what you're able to do is help people with diseases that we have no answers for." And the reason why is because most medicine is based in the genetic paradigm. You know that if you really go on Google now and look up anything about cancer, the first thing you're going to hear is genes. Everything's blamed on the genes. Well, in around 2007, that paradigm was blown up. Turns out that epigenetics controls everything. So for people who are not scientists, I basically use a very simple analogy to explain it. When your computer goes bad, you don't throw the damn computer out. You fix the software that runs it. Okay? And DNA, all it is the hardware. Epigenetics is the software. And what controls epigenetics is light. And that's the key. And if you don't know much about electrons, I'm going to assume you don't know much about light. So what was my job 10 years ago? To teach random Joes off the street about electrons, protons, and photons, and teach them things that would make most people's head split. My long-term members that have been with me for a long time now probably know this science as well as any college-educated, degreed person. In fact, I'd even go further that within some degree states, especially like chemistry, engineering, and biology, they know more. And the key thing is that what makes people efficient at this is if you can get them to focus in on what matters and not what doesn't, they become able to prune all the bad ideas that were put in their head for the first 20, 25 years of their life. And that's what I did. And I tell them, I said, it's very simple for me. Look, I had a massive education to do what I'm doing, but the thing that's made me effective, almost everything I believe now, I didn't learn in medical school and I didn't learn in residency. It's things that I learned after. So that means I started at ground zero. So if I could do it, there's no reason any of you can.
Can you walk me, assuming I'm at ground zero here, I want to go back to the light implications. I definitely understand the epigenetic influence. I'm a huge believer in the environmental influence shapes and being able to affect, you know, more than genes and DNA, et cetera. I'm all on board. I get that. And I understand what you mean by the light affecting the environment, the epigenetic influences, and how we can adjust that. So I am that novice in the proton electron. And so I don't have that kind of time right now, but if the best, can you walk me kind of through the basic understandings of, of this part?
It's actually pretty simple. All right. I'll give you the basics. And we're going to use an example that you used earlier.
Okay.
You talked about a guy that was interested in stress. The immediate first thing that you need to know is any stress cell, do you know what the response is? It releases more extreme low frequency UV light. I want you to think about that for a minute. A cell releases extreme low frequency UV light, and it's proportional to the amount of stress that it gets. So the more stress, the more light's released. Okay. Now, you know something that's interesting about light, it has no mass. So that means it carries the most power density of anything on this planet. Electrons do move at the speed of light, but since they have mass, they don't move as fast and they don't carry as much energy. So from a simpleton approach, a third grade math approach, if your cells are constantly losing light, that means you have to have a mechanism built into you to absorb those frequencies of light. Okay. So if you happen to be a dude that runs the Cognitive Rampage webcast and puts electromagnetic antennas on his ears and talks into one and has it all around him, that those things are discharging your mammalian battery. So you lose electrons. And why is that important? Because Einstein's photoelectric effect that he won the Nobel Prize for in 1922 says that you can only collect or assimilate light when electrons are present. That's called the photoelectric effect. So what's the name of the game in Jack Cruz's world? You need to collect as much net negative charge because that means you have a lot of electrons in your tissues. Then you need to go outside, naked, connected to the ground, so that you can absorb sunlight. If you have no electrons on your body, even if I put you in Uganda or Nairobi, Kenya, at 0 degrees at the equator, it ain't gonna your vitamin D ain't gonna budge, and that's the key. See, we assume that by going outside that we're able to absorb and assimilate this light. That's a false assumption. And the reason it's a false assumption, because everything in quantum physics is based on probability. So the probability is the more electrons you have, the more light you're going to be able to get. So if you build an environment that you live in that allows electrons to be stolen from you very easily, then you wind up in my clinic much quicker than you should with many medical problems, because ultimately what happens is the powerhouse of the cell called the mitochondria doesn't make energy as it should. And see, that's where the crux of the issue comes down in cell biology. Most conventional wisdom biologists and chemists and biochemists have no earthly idea truly how a mitochondria works. And there's a pretty famous guy and at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. His name's Doug Wallace. He's the world expert in mitochondria. It happens that one of those six papers that I was given was written by him. And that is where I started to make the connections between all the science. Exactly. So
I'm struggling to connect. I get what you're saying, definitely. And how, when a cell loses light, how do we know it loses light? What's the reaction to it? How do we know that? Or
pretty simple. What does DNA code for? You tell me. It only codes for one thing: proteins. Okay. So anytime you're stressed, there's a protein called ubiquitin. Ubiquitin is a marker of protein replacement. So anytime you have to replace your proteins, DNA has to unwind. When DNA unwinds, it releases extreme low frequency UV light. How do we know that? A guy named Fritz Popp in the 1960s and 70s did studies with photomultipliers on all kinds of living cells. And he found that anytime this happens, extreme low frequency UV light is released. Okay. So the interesting thing is we have different cells than the other things that are alive on this planet. We're eukaryotes. There's three kingdoms of life: eukaryotes, bacteria, and archaea. The first two you probably don't know a lot about, but they were here before us. About 600 million years ago, they dominated Earth. And they still dominate Earth. They're other kingdoms of life. But what's special about them compared to us? They release 5,000 times more light than we do, their cells. Eukaryotes that have their cell membranes loaded with DHA, which occurred 600 million years ago, through something called the Cambrian explosion, has massive amounts of electric charge in it. Anytime you have electric charge, and I'll try to explain this to you as simple as I can using the sun as an example. When sunlight is made in the sun, what retains the photons in the sun so that they don't immediately come to Earth? Strong electric and magnetic fields. So the cell membranes that are present in eukaryotes aren't present in the other two kingdoms of life. That allows us to retain the light. And that's the reason why in the eukaryotic kingdom, everything that you know is alive, that's complex, is a eukaryote. Okay? And the reason why is because it can retain its light to build complexity and drive speciation. And that process occurred 600 million years ago. What else happened at that time? That was the first time a cell stole a bacteria to turn it into a mitochondria. And guess what? Your mitochondria comes from a bacteria. So why is that important? I just told you the reason. Bacteria can release 5,000 times more light than our cells. So what do you know about mitochondria? Very basic stuff you probably heard about in high school. They release heat. What do you know is heat? Heat is red light. Got it?
Yeah.
And what does red heat or red light do to water inside a cell? I'll give you a classic one that you probably did in high school to answer the question. When you took a beer can and put it in your freezer, what happens? It expands and blows up. Well, guess what? The counterintuitive part that most people forget is when you heat water up, it shrinks. And that's the key in a mitochondria because it's surrounded by water. And as that heat is released, the water shrinks the respiratory proteins. What do the respiratory proteins in a mitochondria do? Tunnels electrons from food. Guess what? That makes you more energy efficient. So I realized immediately if I put myself in cold water and ate just nothing but fat, I should lose weight. And I did. And that's kind of how the whole process started.
Holy shit. Okay. I got to absorb that for a minute, Doc.
Well, most people, when they hear it the first time, do. But it's really, really not hard to put together because these are all.
That's kind of what I'm saying is it's connecting like that for me easily, but it's absorbing the truth and the idea of it, right? And, you know,
just think about it like this. Now you know why polar bears and wild animals get really fat in the autumn. And, you know, most people argue about this all the time. People think that they get fatter in the winter. Well, that's because they have the human perspective. But I tell everybody to throw the Discovery Channel on. And I said, you know when everybody gets fat? In this time of the year, in the Northern Hemisphere, in the autumn. You know why? Carbohydrates like pumpkins and squash are still available, but the light is dropping. And see, you don't get fat when there's strong UV light out. Okay? That's the reason why there's the link between vitamin D and obesity. But when you do get fat is when the light through your eye and your skin is not strong enough and you're eating too many carbs. That's how nature fattens us. And you're designed to lose that weight in the wintertime when it's cold, when food is scarce and you're not eating as much, and you're taking that fat, which is basically protons and carbon dioxide, and you're oxidizing it in your mitochondria that can fat burn. Once you understand how the process works, then you go, I got this. Basically, I got to stop tricking my body thinking it's the summertime all the time, and I need to start to live like a wild mammal, because that's what you are. See, we're the only mammal on this planet that controls its environment, my friend. If you don't believe me, take a look at what I'm looking at right now. You got all your clothes on. You didn't come out your mama like that. And if you can show me another animal on this planet that's born with a cognitive rampage t-shirt on, I'll kiss your ass.
That'd be awesome. That would be awesome. Yeah, I mean, holy shit. So, I mean, yeah, I understand the link. I'm a primal guy, man. I hunt, I fish, I do all. I mean, I'm a believer in that. And the connecting of light for me, I mean, I've always seen it. There's times my wife has been like, you have to leave now and get your kayak and go away. Go fishing for 3 days and just disappear. And, you know, that has to happen. Maybe it's because I'm surrounded by all this fucking shit. You're scared of me, man, right? So, I mean, I find my flow states that way, to where I know I'm in the cave, if you will, as it's called. And when I'm out of here, man, it's outdoors, it's surfing.
Well, guess what? My cave is called an operating room. And see, that's the key. The things that I do now, I'm actually in my office. The hospital's right next to me. I look at, when I'm finished my cases, I go stand outside on the grass right by the helicopter pad right over there. That's what I do. I didn't do that 10 or 12 years ago, but now I do that now. You have to reconnect with nature. And well, here's the key.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, man. There's so many questions. You're going to go off and I'm going to have more. I get the idea of electrons. If you're housing them and then you're in the sunlight, you pull more in. So if you're not healthy and you're not housing them, then simply walking outside wouldn't help absorb those essentially.
Correct.
I got that. So what is the proper absorption? And is that absorption possible, like say in salt water or surfing or something like that?
Well, yeah, but the way it works, in other words, now what you're asking me is a good question, but it gets down to the nitty gritty, the physics organisms, and this is where you need to understand water. And there's a book. I would strongly recommend you get this book, because I think, especially if your daughter wants to be a neurosurgeon, she would love this book. It's called The Fourth Phase of Water, written by a guy named Gerald Pollack. And basically, this book was just published, I think, in 2013. So you have to realize I've been teaching people all this stuff since 2005. And the way that I came upon all this data was from translating Russian data and found out all this information. And also from another guy called Gilbert Ling, who was a brilliant guy, but wrote books that nobody could understand, because he basically tried to use biologic words to explain quantum processes in water. So it's kind of one of those things when you read it, you just go poof and your head blows up. But that's where I got the ideas. But fundamentally, what happens when sunlight hits water, it turns it into a battery. That's all you need to know. It turns it into other things. But for this podcast, since we're swimming on the surface, that's really all you need to know. And what that process is called, the formation of exclusion zone. And what the exclusion zone is basically the charge separates negative and positive in water. So that negative and positive, you can easily just in your own mind's eye think about electrons and protons. And here's the funny thing. The water that you have in your house right now is what we call bulk phase water, meaning that if you were to put a voltmeter in it, the voltage wouldn't be high. But if you took that very same water outside and put it in the sun and we did the same test, it would have a huge net negative charge, because what happened? Sunlight's energy is buried in the water. And water has a very specific quantum process tied to it. It's what we call a red light chromophore, okay? That means it absorbs more red light than anything else, okay? And red light's really important, because what does it do? It makes more of an exclusion zone. Now, what other band in sunlight expands the exclusion zone in water? UV light, okay? Just since we all have a video, see what's right next to my computer while I talk to you? That's a UVA light. These glasses block blue light. Everything that I do is tied to this light story. And when you take UV light and IR light and you put them together, you're making a much stronger battery. So let's think about your car, your motorcycle now. If the battery was stronger, would it be able to do way more stuff? The answer is yes. And see, that's fundamentally what illness is. It's when your battery isn't well charged, you're not able to do the things that you normally would be able to do. And it's that simple of a concept to understand. Now, obviously, there's a lot more detail to it, but I'm trying to give you that 30,000-foot view. And what happens when you have a higher exclusion zone, you have a higher net negative charge in your cell. And this net negative charge is also energized by all your cell membranes around it because they're loaded with DHA. And what does DHA do? It's the stuff that comes from seafood, which is why my book is called the Epipaleo RX. Why? It's based around the marine seafood chain. And when did the marine seafood chain explode? Well, right around that 600 million years ago. See how we go back to that story? And the reason for that is DHA has a fundamental physical finding. It's a P and N type semiconductor. Don't worry about that. Basically what it means, it can turn sunlight into a DC electric current in your body. What does that mean? Raises the voltage. So it makes you more net negative. What did I tell you earlier? The more electrons you got, what happens? The more light you absorb. That's what drives your vitamin D level up, okay? So what's the other factor? The other factor, which is what we started this segment with, was water. Well, here's a cool one that I guarantee your daughter and your wife would get when you have the discussion with them. Told you that water builds discharge. Well, all that shit that you got sitting around you right now doing this podcast dehydrates you. See, and you want the proof in the pudding? Next time your wife makes a steak and you have it as a leftover, I want you to put it in the microwave and heat it up. Tell me what it tastes like.
Yeah, rubber.
Shoe leather.
Yeah.
Guess what? What you're doing to yourself every time you do a podcast is you're that steak in the microwave oven. See, oh, every single thing around you.
You killed me, man.
Just so you know, every single thing around you has RF frequencies and microwaves, and you don't realize it.
Yeah.
Okay? Because remember, you're doing this to get information out. Your focus is in the wrong place. And see, that's what you need to understand. So if you really want to rampage, you need to keep your electrons right here, my friend. And see, that's the key. The key for me in losing the weight was the more net negative charge that I built in my brain, I reduced the inflammation in my brain because obesity is fundamentally an inflammatory brain condition. And once you fix that, then you start to fix everything. And what I found through all the biohacks that I did is that it doesn't just fix obesity. It fixes lots of other shit. And that's when it got really interesting for me. And that's when I really jumped down the rabbit hole of quantum physics and then started to find out what the physics of cells and organisms are all about. And, you know, if any of your current listeners go and look at my blog now, their head will explode because, I mean, dude, we're a decade into this, so I'm not on the surface anymore. I very rarely talk about this stuff when I do podcasts anymore because people want to talk about some of the new stuff, you know, that I'm working on and some of the new biohacks that I'm working on. But I'm happy to talk about the old stuff because I think it's really important to get the fundamentals down for people to really understand why certain things work and why certain things don't. There's so many beliefs out there that completely cock block us to getting what we need to get done. And I believe that when you teach people what to focus in on versus what not to focus in on, you're directing their attention to something that can truly change their life. And you can do that without a scalpel. And that's why, you know, back 10 years ago when I did my TED talk that got pulled for being too controversial, it's like doing brain surgery without a scalpel.
Anything that's non-invasive, that's natural, I'm a fan of, period. And trying to grasp onto this, whether it's basic or new, anybody new to this, I think, you know, would have to walk in, you know, the way I'm trying to walk in. And I get the absorption. And so it's about preparing and prepping your body by eating the right foods to make you, I guess, more susceptible to taking in light. And you say through the eyes and through the skin, right?
Right. Well, the eye is the number one what we call in physics black box radiator. It's a perfect black box radiator because it lets light in and lets light out. The other parts of the body is the skin. The reason why the skin's important, very few people know this, but the skin is the largest organ in the body. And the skin and the brain are connected in the embryo. They both come from neuroectoderm. So that means there has to be processes, both biologic and quantum, in the body that connect the brain and the skin. One of those you already mentioned. That's what vitamin D and vitamin A do. And those are the chemical moieties that work. But guess what? Those chemical moieties, both are what we call fluorophore proteins. What does that mean? They're both acted upon by UV light. And that's another, you know, different topic. You'll see every time we touch a different area, then you'll begin to say, I never thought about this. And, you know, one of the cool things about the eye that most people don't realize is that the eye has four different true functions. The one that you've learned about and all your readers have learned about ad nauseum is the eye camera. That's vision. That's not the single most important one. The single most important one is the eye clock. And the eye clock is what controls that central retinal pathway that controls all growth and metabolism in your body. It wires directly to the leptin receptor in the hypothalamus that controls how well you handle electrons in your body. And that's the one that changed my life. Now, there's another one. That's the reason why I showed you that light that's up there. It's called neuropsin. It's an opsin protein. And, you know, opsin proteins are photoreceptors. And you probably know about that one photoreceptor in your eye that works for camera vision, which is rhodopsin. Well, this is a new one we just found in 2008. And this was one of the other predictions that I had made to my members that we were going to find another opsin somewhere in the eye and the skin that was a UVA light illuminator. And that's exactly what it turned out to be. And there's a fourth part of the eye. I gave you three now. The fourth part, I haven't even talked that much to my members about, but they're getting a webinar in October and November that are about this part of the eye. And there's a part of your body called tensegrade, meaning, I try to explain this the best way I can. Think about the structure of the building or the structure of a body. In all animals, it's made out of collagen, okay? And collagen is the number one protein in your body. It's about 71, 72%. Well, it acts like structural girder. Think like the Eiffel Tower or the inside of the Statue of Liberty. So if that structural process is bad, your body turns to shit. So when I see a fat person, I see someone's physically fit, I look at it, the amount of structure that's in their body, the amount of structured water that's in their body is much higher or lower. In other words, it's how their body interacts with the four physical forces in the universe. And generally that tells me that a fat person and a fit person, the main difference between them is how well their collagen is electrified by sunlight and water. Okay. And that's called the tensegrade system. Well, guess how you get that signal every morning, Chief? Through your eyes, through cells called Mueller cells in your eyes. And they're designed to act just like the fiber optic cables that all this internet crap is going through. Okay. And they pass right through the photoreceptors and our retinas are transparent to it. And guess what they synapse on? They synapse on the collagen receptors in your eye. So if you want a really cool thing to think about, all your readers can Google this as they're listening to this. Google myopia and Asians. And you know what you'll find? 1960s, only about 50% of Asian teenagers had myopia. Today, the answer is 97%. You know why? They all use this, and it's loaded with blue light. And this blue light actually causes the elongation of your eye because of the effect on Mueller cells. It reduces the tensegrity in your eyeball. Remember, I just told you the whole body is tied to this, but your eyeball also is tied to it. And when your globe is round, the refraction is different than it is when it's elongated. You call an elongated eye nearsightedness. The technical medical term is myopia. Myopia is a precursor for disease, okay? And I've got a blog post all about that. It's called Ubiquination 24, and it teaches you exactly how this process occurs. But here's the funny thing. You go on Google now and Google this blue light hazard or this Asian thing, you'll know that epidemiology of humans, we've known this for 20 or 30 years, but nobody knows why. What's the difference? My friend, you've grown up in a world that's blue light toxic. I didn't. I didn't become blue light toxic until I got out of my residency, because that's when the internet was in full force. Remember, it's only been around since 96, 97 on a population basis.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there was only, we just had an iPod when 9/11 happened. I mean, there was no phone, YouTube. That's just 2001, right?
Right. And here's what people don't understand. I always tell people that non-native EMF is a variety of different, you know, frequencies. I've already told you two that I'm worried about with you, with RF and microwaves. But let me tell you the most damaging one, because it's the one we don't appreciate, which is blue light. And that's why if I put my iPhone on, I don't know if you can see it. You see the screen, how it's yellow?
Yeah.
That blocks all the blue light. So when any idiot calls me in the middle of the night, I'm protecting myself. Right. These glasses, since this is a blue screen, these are blue tech lenses. They're untinted. And I use them anytime I'm indoors talking to somebody on the internet. Why is this on? To actually help this thing. So I'm trying to help myself. Now I'm getting some red from the sun here, but fortunately it's the afternoon, so the sun's on the other side of the building. But I got enough this morning, you know, before you and I talked. And this is the one part that I want to really get to your listeners and to you, because I do think it's important you understand this. So I'm going to teach you a little bit about circadian biology and why it's important. In the morning when the sun rises, all you have is visible light and infrared light, okay? And basically what that means is the amount of blue that's in sunlight and the amount of red is equivalent. So they cancel each other out. Blue light in the morning is very important because that's the signal that turns your pituitary gland on to release the hormones from about 6 to 10 that normally happens. But here's the point. The color temperature of blue light in AM sunlight is 1800 Kelvin, okay? The color temperature of your iPhone is 6500 Kelvin. So it's 4 times the amount of blue. So if you're the idiot that first thing you do is check your emails and goes on Instagram and goes on Snapchat or goes on Tinder to find a piece of ass, you got a problem. And that problem becomes magnified every day you do it, because what does it do? It ruins those pathways we just talked about in your eye, and it changes things.
Well, there's all kinds of research. I mean, I don't stand next to my microwave if I ever use it to eat. I rarely even use it to eat anything. I mean,
but that's not the big problem, dude. This is your big problem.
Well, yeah, no, that's what I mean. I'm talking about all the research, though, that's coming out for younger generations. Eyesights are going down. I mean, there's tons of things that are coming out. I mean, you were
well, they're hormones. Do you know what the syndrome's called in Asia? It's called the celibacy syndrome. Because guess what blue light does? Ruins your testosterone level, ruins your fertility. So you're old enough to know this. Go ask any of your friends or your wife's friends who's becoming rich. It's all the infertility doctors. Why? Because all the people in your generation are addicted to this technology, and they're making those OBGYNs rich, and they don't know why. It's because they put this bidirectional microwave device right by their Johnson or their ovaries.
Ooh. You're dropping bombs, man. Holy shit.
Dude, these are bombs that I dropped 10 years ago.
Hey, well, fucking keep dropping them, man, because they're new for the people listening. Look, I mean, the light, I'm gonna walk back down, because I kind of want to get to the three things that you really talk about a lot about taking care of yourself and healthy. We're kind of covering the light stuff. You know, and I get it, man. I'm a nature guy. If I'm not out there, I got to have it. And there is no question in my mind, when I jump in that salt water, if I'm surfing or if I'm, you know, doing anything like that, I'm a totally different person during and after. I mean, it's a must. So between the research, you are far on the front edge and the trenches with this, man. So thank you for all that first and foremost. But I mean, for me, it begins to make logical sense in my mind. The light, my own experiences in the light, active, you know, salt water, et cetera, eating tons of seafood, et cetera. So the second part is the leptin area, right? I'm saying that correctly?
Yeah, leptin. L-E-P-T-I-N. Yeah, leptin is just a hormone. It's a proxy that is basically an accountant in your brain, in a part of your brain called the hypothalamus, that basically is an electron counter. And it's very simple. the more electrons you get from the environment, meaning from grounding or from the sun, the less you need from food. Because what is food fundamentally, my friend? It breaks down to electrons that go into your mitochondria. So if you got a lot from the sun and you get a lot from grounding, you don't need as much from food. That means you don't get hungry.
Yeah.
And that's it. So you know what I tell people to think about? My leptin prescription in cold thermogenesis, I always tell them to get this in their mind. I want you to think about the Sphinx. What does he do? All four of his extremities are grounded completely to the ground, and he looks to the east every morning as the sun rises. That's one of the key things in both the leptin prescription and cold thermogenesis. The only thing that the cold part, even though he's in the middle of the freaking desert in Egypt, it's still cooler at that time. And notice he's got no clothes on the top. Got it?
Yeah.
Everything is there, dude. The ancients had it right.
I'm with you, man. I'm half Native American. So when you know, I hunt my own food. I mean, I already live this way. So, I mean, you're talking to a guy that's probably already biasly leaning that way to natural light and less scalpel and less medication anyway.
Well, the big thing is we got to get you limiting your podcast. Like, I know you're not going to want to hear that, but you need to realize that as soon as you do the podcast, you need to be outside. You need to be drinking a lot of water. In fact, notice me and you are talking. This is almost done. This is round two because of what we're on. And you told me
shout out for my sponsor.
Yeah, but guess what? You also told me you're drinking coffee. I'm gonna give you a plus five here. Never drink coffee during a podcast. You know why? Uh-oh. Coffee dehydrates you.
Yeah, that's when I drink my co-tea. No, I try to do it. Actually, I it's kind of a focus thing for me. Actually, sipping and listening, especially knowing today the class that I was about to take. I'm using every biological and drug and I can use to stay focused and following this. But then as I'm into it, as you say, it doesn't seem that hard. It just seems like new discoveries we're trying to understand and having to break norms. Now, I know nothing of the eyes, so you're talking to a novice there. But the light stuff, I totally can see on point. I mean, I know that feeling in myself when I've spent a week on my kayak or 3 days on my kayak, you know, eating the fish.
Let's talk about the light a little bit more. The same guy that we mentioned earlier, Fritz Popp, you know what else he found? We leach the most light through our fingertips, our face, and our toenails. So this will give you a new appreciation for how this works. You know how the Chinese and Eastern medicine talks about meridians. Guess where we absorb more light through the skin along those meridian planes? What links those meridian planes to the sun? Something I just told you already, collagen. They're huge fascial bands. That's why they're located where they are. But what turns them on predominantly? The eye. The sun is a solar panel. I should say the skin is a solar panel that is an accessory to that. And the key thing is you're designed to go through. See, before there was any doctors, there was any experts, there was any NIH, there was any podcast, there was these people that evolved around the East African Rift, around where three tectonic plates are. That's where the magnetic flux was through the roof. That's what changed us from primate to human. And they got, alienated from the forest because of the sea level change. And what was the only food source that those stranded primates had? DHA. When they started eating shellfish and they started collecting tons of DHA within their system, and that's what developed two things in them, their brain and their immune system. Those two things are what separates us from our nearest ancestors, which are the chimps.
Yeah, there's a...
That's how it works, bro. And yep. The key thing is, this was in a tropical zone. So you had strong light, strong magnetic flux, and a strong DHA diet. So what you need to realize, there was no experts out there then. And the fact that we're here today talking about this means that what they did then was very successful. And it's been successful. Our species has begun screwing up the system for about the last 200 years when we invented fake light at night, started wearing clothes, and society and culture brought us away from that nature. And when you said you were Native American, I tell all my members that the last true humans that got it right were the American Indians, and we called them savages.
Yeah,
now 120 years or 200 years later, the conquerors are now as sick as shit, fat as shit, and dying at unbelievable rates. I mean, our profession, my profession, can actually keep them alive for a long time. But do you want to be alive or do you want to thrive? And I look at it like now people just survive. And that for me is not good enough.
Man, well, look at all those head politicians, if you will. If you ask me, they all look like evil villains sitting, you know, propped up in some chair, kept alive by like 18 heart transplants and shit.
Well, the reason why they are is because, let's face it, society and civilization, it's kind of funny we're talking about this right after the last debate, because both parties really are designed to control humans. Remember, when you make people obedient idiots, I mean, I tell people this all the time. Why did Obama change the rules from analog to digital in 2009? Well, you'll be shocked to hear this. There's patents out from the federal government in the 1960s. They knew about the blue light being able to control people much easier. That's why the process is here. If you go want to take it even further back, 1967, there's a Radiation Control Act. You know what that act fundamentally did and why we're going to suffer? It took the burden of proof from corporations before they made this stuff to people. So now we have a lady who's single with four kids, who two of them have autism, the other one's got electromagnetic hypersensitivity, and the other one's got autoimmune disease, and she can't sue Verizon or Sony because of that act. She doesn't have any money to do it. The crazier part is, in 1996, one of my representatives, I hate to admit it was him, but Billy Tozen, ran the FCC and put a provision in the Telecommunications Act of 1996 that basically screwed us all, that said no company can be sued for any health issues. Because back then, they suppressed the data. And we've known about this for literally since the 1950s and 60s. There's a book written by a guy named Andrew Marino that documents everything we knew. And you can tell that the government has been doing this sequentially because they know it's the easiest way to control people. There's even a patent, believe it or not, from the 1960s that talks about how to control brainwaves and behavior utilizing blue light and radiation through TVs.
It wouldn't surprise me. Look, they suppress, look what they're doing to marijuana and psychedelics and everything else. I mean,
do you know why people want weed? It's very simple. When your brain is French fried from the non-native EMF, weed calms the system down. Just think about it like this. The world that we used to live in, was a very quiet world where you'd hear songbirds and banging on the drum, things like that. Now, the world that you live in, dude, is like being a Metallica concert right next to the big, huge speaker. And the thing is, you don't really understand how it affects your biology. But here's the key. The key is you lose your fidelity. And when I say fidelity, I'm talking about fidelity to nature. The signal-to-noise ratio for you being able to connect to the sun and connect to the Earth's magnetic flux is reduced by these effects. And I have a term for that I use with my members. I call it a reduced quantum yield. And what does that mean? I use that term because most people understand how trees work. It works on photosynthesis. Photosynthesis is also a completely quantized process. So if you took a tarp wherever you live and put it over a tree and came back 3 months later, you'd see that the tree didn't put out as much oxygen as it would have. And that would show to you, okay, that's a quantum yield issue. Well, we're doing the same thing. All that shit that's on you, that reduces your quantum yield. And it's exactly the same process. In fact, the two chemicals that control it, if I convince you to go look at chlorophyll that's in a leaf and hemoglobin in your red blood cells, you know what you'd find out? They're exactly the same molecules. You know the only difference is? Chlorophyll's got magnesium in the middle. Hemoglobin's got iron in the middle. They're both porphyrins. What do porphyrins do? They absorb all frequencies of UV light.
Shit. Man. So I want to – I'm staying on this, the light thing too, and the types of light. I mean, look at the research. The kids go outside less, right? They're playing outside. They make jokes about it. I tend to look at comedians because they're great philosophers of the time. You know, so they joke about how the kid's always on the phone, the kid's at the iPad at the table. They don't want to go outside. They remember when they were a kid, they just had a stick in the dirt. You know, I mean, you see that development. So a lot of things, those symptoms that are showing are kind of...
Well, let's talk about those symptoms. Your generation is facing. It's called ADHD, right? You know about that. Uh-huh. Now, you want to hear something freak out? Get a piece of paper and a pen right now and write this down. Health and Light. It's the name of the book written by a guy named John Ott, O-T-T. Okay? You know what study he did in Sarasota, Florida in the 1970s? He took two classrooms... One that had the shades drawn and the windows closed and put the fake lights on. And another one where the windows were open, the shades were up. And he time-lapse photographed them over weeks. Okay?
Yeah.
The kids that had the fake artificial light all had symptoms of ADHD. We've known about this since the 1960s and 70s, dude. And you know what John Ott was famous for? Probably before your time. He was Walt Disney's time-lapse photographer. And you remember when they used to show those plants, how they grow?
Yeah.
That's how he got into this. And he started to notice that this effect was in plants. Why am I mentioning this to you now? I just told you the difference between chlorophyll and hemoglobin is very small. Well, guess what? If it happens in plants, that means it happens to happen in humans. And that's what Ott was studying. And he was right. And he published this book in the 70s. You can go read it now. So your generation doesn't even know this stuff. And see, it's my job, the way I look at it, is to connect those dots for you to realize that Cisco, AT&T, Apple are absolutely fucking child abuse, okay? That's the way I look at it. I look at all technology equivalent to you seeing a mother inside of Walmart kicking the shit out of her kid for no reason. And the problem is you don't get that what you're doing is that bad until somebody brings the science to you and you look at it and you examine it for yourself and you do your own due diligence. And that's why I said my job's becoming exponentially easier because people are making books now that show you that I'm right. Now, all the fancy quantum physics and quantum biology that I teach is not in those books. But trust me, when you read... For example, Ubiquination 24 blog post, you're going to know why myopia is happening in Asia. I can promise you that. And you're going to go, And if you take that and go into any ophthalmologist office, they're going to be like, I don't know anything about this. And here's the thing. That's why I tell people you can't get mad at doctors. Because I didn't learn this, dude, in medical school. This is stuff that once I realized it worked in me, I started to use myself as a self-experiment. That's why I'm a biohacker extraordinaire. I mean, some of the stuff that I biohack would blow your mind. I mean, look, I just came up with something 2-3 years ago with a GE light engineer. We made the first quantum wearable device. We actually sold it on Indiegogo to random people. It sold out in 31 minutes. It's due to be released this year. And what does it do? It augments the mammalian battery. So if you have a podcast, you could wear it while you're doing the podcast so that you can improve the energy transfer that would normally happen from being outside inside. Now, it's not something that's designed to replace nature. It's designed to augment. And that's how it works.
Kind of like a defense, like a repellent kind of thing.
Yeah, you could consider it a shark repellent, you know, something like that. I consider it really more of like a AAA for a discharge battery.
Yeah, when you mentioned the child abuse factor, now look, I say, and I get a lot of shit for it, that when I see obese children, you know, the same way, I call that child abuse because you're
well, but it is. But you know what the problem is? And you know, this is near and dear to my heart. Let me just tell you, and part of this is because of our social and cultural beliefs. Most parents don't know what the cause is because the doctors don't. And the thing is, you know, they'll say that the kid eats too much. I mean, I have to tell you, that's the number one thing why I hate all the food gurus, because that meme is out there. And that's not it, dude. I mean, any of my members that have come and hung out with me in New Orleans in the French Quarter will tell you, they saw me eat and they saw what I look like. They're like, dude, this just doesn't make sense. Well, what am I malignant about? I'm malignant about the light, my environment and the things that I do, and I mind my environment. See, I always tell people that when you're sick or you're obese, it's a defect in the environment, not a defect in you. And your job is to understand what that defect is and fix it. Once you fix it, then guess what? Things in your life begin to normalize and you'll start to see improvements. And the thing that, unfortunately, since we observe reality in a linear fashion, when you begin to understand some of the details that I teach people, that light is nonlinear. Just so to explain this further, because this will get you jumped down the rabbit hole a little bit. Most people know that light has a duality. It can be both a wave and a particle. That's the basic that people know. But here's another one that people don't realize. You know, light is the only thing in the universe that breaks the theory of relativity. And you know why? Because it has a speed limit. See, if light didn't have a speed limit, what we observe to be reality would be completely different. Whoa. And light, no matter what frequency it is, has the same speed limit. And that speed limit, plus the fact that it can act as a wave and a particle, makes light really different. And the funny thing is, the faster light moves, meaning closer to the speed of light, the more wave-like it is. The further away, it becomes more particle-like. And that has huge implications for things like me and you that are alive, because that's how the photoelectric effect works. And when we scale this whole story back to that 600 million year time zone where I told you the Cambrian explosion comes, what if I was to tell you that the reason why eukaryotes showed up overnight, remember Darwin told us about natural selection and gradual speciation. Here's the crazy part of reality that we know. 600 million years ago, everything that was complex on the planet showed up literally in 30 million years.
Right, that short time span.
Right. So you know what that means? He won right. And you know what changed? UV light, oxygen, and DHA all showed up at the same time right there. And guess what? Guess what it was linked to? This is what people don't understand. Our star, okay? I'll show you some of my pictures in here. See that big thing right there? It's a sun. Mm-hmm. Okay? You'll notice every picture in here has the sun around it. Okay? The sun is a G-class star. You know what that means? Back for the first probably 3.5 billion years, it was young. That means its luminosity wasn't as bright as it is now. 600 million years ago, it was in its midlife. What do G-class stars do in their midlife? They become more luminous and they start to release UV light.
And then the
guess what?
Life explosion is the explanation there.
And guess what happened? That's the first time that life was able to use the photoelectric effect. See, bacteria and archaea to this day, if you put that UV light right here next to them, you kill them. But you don't die when you go outside, do you? Now, the dermatologist and ophthalmologist want to tell you that you will, but it turns out you get better. Why? Because you're part of the eukaryotic kingdom that is able to turn that light into a DC electric current. And we have now strong data for 50 years from a guy named Robert O. Becker that shows that our regeneration ability goes up with the higher our DC electric current goes. So in other words, the more net negative our cells are, the longer we live.
There's a couple more things that are coming across that I wanted to talk about with you is the light thing. I just love. I could sit on that for a while.
Well, if you want to learn more about it, I would tell you there's a book. It's called Light Sculpting Life. It's written by a guy named Roland Van Wyk. I would strongly recommend you read it. It'll save you probably $10,000 because that's what it cost me to photocopy his bibliography from Russian and translate it. The book is phenomenal. Cost maybe $100. It's hard to get because so many people have been ordering it, but it just got published in 2014. Prior to that, you had to do what I did. I told you about Pollock's book. Anybody who's a technology skeptic, Andrew Marino's book. He was Becker's physicist and lawyer. It's called Going Somewhere. Read the book. If you want to really know about the damaging effect of cell phones, there's a book called Overpowered by Martin Blank. He's a PhD researcher at Columbia University. Again, all these books, you know, off the top of my head are now published. You want to learn a little bit more about biology, read any book that Nick Lane, L-A-N-E, has written. His last book and probably Power, Sex, and Suicide. His last book's called The Vital Question. Phenomenal. but probably one of the coolest books to read. If you really want to understand just how much we don't know, I'll give you two books. One is called Cosmos Sapiens, written by a guy named John Hans. That tells you the current state of science, what is truly believable and what's not. Phenomenal book. It'll blow your mind just how much of what you think is true isn't. And the last book, which I think most people are fascinated by because they don't understand quantum processes, is written by a guy named Jim L. Khalili. It's called Life at the Edge. And basically, that's the first book that's ever been written that shows that everything alive is quantized. In other words, just like a leaf is on a tree, so are we. And he gets into the processes, and he's got some great videos on YouTube. He's at Surrey University in the UK. He co-wrote the book with a guy named John Joy McFadden, who's a biologist. And the book is just, it just takes you into the realm that I'm in. I'm way far down that hole. Like I tell people not even to become a member until they read the basics. And I said, when you're ready to step on the gas pedal, that's when you sign up and become a member, because dude, I go pedal to the metal. I just do not stop. And the reason that I feel that I can't stop, I don't want to sink to your level. I want to elevate you to my level, because this information transfer is extremely important. See, I'm not going to be around forever, and I need my son, your generation, I need you to get this message. I need you to understand that many of the things that we look at as good are bad. In other words, the same key opens the door to heaven and hell, and you need to understand that. So that way, when you use the things that you use them smartly.
There it is. There's that cognitive rampage right at the end, man. That was beautiful. I have nothing else to say. That's it. I'm covered. You dropped enough bombs today, man. Thank you for sharing and going back for me and for the listeners, man, today. I got a lot to read and go back forth, but maybe when I get a little bit more knowledgeable or further down the hole, man, you mind coming back on and taking
any time? Just make sure that we do it on a Friday or a Saturday. Those are my times.
Okay. All right, man. I'll aim for that. Doc, where can everybody find you at?
You can find me at jackkruse.com. It's KRUSE. And if you want to cut through probably the first 3 years of my blog, just buy my book on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. It's called The Epipaleo RX. Based on just this podcast, I think when you read the last chapter of the book, you'll go, wow. And you'll see where all this stuff came from. All the stuff that we talked about today, really the last chapter of that book, will absolutely, you'll be into it knee deep. And then when you're ready to jump down further, I would just tell you, I have memberships on my site. Free is bronze. You get to read stuff, but the real good ones are silver, platinum, and gold. And what those do is I do monthly webinars where I basically give you a topic, make predictions, tell you what I think is going to happen. And I do live Q&As, and sometimes they last 2 and 3 hours, and no questions are off topic. You want to talk about some crazy batshit thing, I'm fine with it, but I'm going to always bring it back to the three things that life organizes around: light, water, and magnetism.
Yeah, you don't play either. On your blog, you say, look, don't join this until you, when you send that in. I read through the website there, and it says that you don't play. And I like that. It's the form of being ready to be awakened, being ready for that information.
Well, you know, I guess I'll leave you with this thought. I believe, my fundamental belief is, who are you good for if you're not good enough for yourself? And when I look at other people, kind of like when we're doing this podcast, I'm not interested in infecting people swimming away from me. I'm interested in people who are swimming toward me. You know, you have to have some skin in the game. When you go to my profession long enough and you keep getting told the same shit over and over again, it doesn't work. You have a duty as a human being to say, well, wait a minute. I got to do something different. That's what I told you I did 12 years ago. And I have no time to waste arguments on people who are skeptics anymore, because all they do is they deride the message. I mean, I'm giving it to you And I'm telling you, you do with it what you want. You take it from where it is. When you have a specific problem that you want to understand how a quantum biologist would think about it versus a conventional wisdom neurosurgeon, I can bridge that gap for you. I can tell you kind of what the difference is. I haven't covered all, you know, disease processes, but I just did this not that long ago on my blog. Somebody sent me a question, a long-term member, about a weird cataract syndrome I never heard of before called hypoferritin cataract syndrome. And what did I do? I was sitting outside at the pool and I opened up a bottle of wine and I just started thinking about it. I said, you know, I think I got something. I started, and that weekend I posted the blog, and that just happened literally in the last 6 weeks. So things like that that are out there, I believe that when people have skin in the game, those are the people I want to help. I know that this information is not going to resonate with everybody. You know, it's kind of like a piano. When you hit that tuning fork, not all the strings vibrate, dude. But see, I'm interested in the strings that vibrate. That's how I look at people. If something you heard today resonates for you and you say, you know, I really do want to know a little bit more about this, to examine this for myself before, you know, I go all in, dude, I'm cool with that. I mean, that honestly, those are the kind of people that I totally dig, because I want people to be skeptical, but I want them to be skeptical and ask the right questions and go back to the people they believe now and say, how am I buying this? This doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. The questioning, I think, is important for everything. I mean, I think we have to question everyone's theories and walk in. That's how we grow and be humble enough to listen and not have to prove the points. And what I do on the Rampage, even though it's kind of that mean title, I literally try to walk on here, play humble and go, okay, I'm open. Let's walk through this for me. And I stay that way. And then I'll go find it out for myself. And I appreciate the work you do, and I'm diving deeper into it. And maybe my generation reaching up to yours, I'm pretty sure we can get a lot of this out, man. And thanks again.
Hey, no problem. Take care.
Hey, man, I'll see you, Jack. Thank you.
Bye-bye.